Today, how low will the New Zealand GDP go? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And I'm joined again by Joe Wilkes. Hello, Joe.
Good morning, Martin. How are you?
Yeah, very good. On a new computer, I see.
Yeah, well, I've changed venues today because I spent last night looking at some of the data coming out of the UK, and I thought, well, sod it, I'm going nuclear. So we'll go sit in the bunker.
In the bunker, yeah. Well, they certainly are struggling over there at the moment, aren't they? It's pretty appalling. But they were late to the party and then made some really bad decisions and herd immunity and those sorts of things, and they're now reaping the whirlwind.
Yeah, well, some of the stats coming out of the UK are just phenomenal. I think the car sales were the lowest car sales since 1946, 4,000 units in April compared to, I think it was 138,000 in April last year. And yeah, we're starting to get a few, I suppose, finger in the air numbers coming out of New Zealand now. The RBNZ have published some data this morning, which I thought we should probably tuck into and have a little look at, because I'm quite intrigued by this. So they've issued some guesstimates around the impact of the lockdown on various sectors of the economy and where GDP differences might be. First of all, I find this a bit unusual because the RBNZ and the Treasury generally aren't particularly good at updating in real time. We're normally expecting the figures for the first quarter's GDP, so this would be to the end of March. We wouldn't typically see that until the end of May. So these guesstimates for the lockdown period of April, we'll see. I mean, I haven't seen where they've got the numbers from, but my guess is that there's a bit of that going on. So, yeah, and do you want to run through it by sector, what they're looking at in terms of GDP by industry during lockdown as a percent of its pre-coronavirus levels? They're talking about the primary sector being reduced to 75% of normal output, manufacturing down to 48% of normal output, construction 19%, retail and wholesale trade 39% of pre-lockdown level. Utilities at 80%. I'm guessing that's because everybody's at home. We're all on our computers, all watching Netflix, and the energy and power company's probably doing okay. Accommodation, food services down to 11% of what their pre-lockdown levels were. Other services, and I'm not sure entirely what would be bundled into this, but 68%. And good old government still ticking away at 90% of GDP. So they're obviously an incredibly efficient bunch. And obviously government spending is always, always wonderful addition to GDP growth. So I don't know how they've collated these numbers, but I'd be surprised if things like, auto sales, and you look at the UK's numbers where you're looking at, numbers that are 95% lower than they were in April last year. I'm guessing that we'll have had a similar hammering in those markets. And if you look at the forecourts, I had a little drive around where I am yesterday, so I'm allowed to drive around now, but not too far. I'm not allowed to switch regions. But I had a little drive around where I am the other day, and just looking at the forecourts, they're all full. But what's interesting is if you look at things like TradeMe, which I think is quite a nice precursor of how New Zealanders are feeling, you can see some quite big spikes in certain commodities. I like the Ford Ranger Index, because that's always a bit of a bellwether of how the construction industry might be feeling. And I suppose the Ford Ranger is the choice of the developer who's doing well for himself. Those that aren't doing so well, they're going to get the Hiluxes. But the Ford Ranger numbers in the second-hand market, that's skyrocketed. So you're looking at an increase in the number of utes for sale just of that category of around 20% over the last 3 weeks. So people are looking at, okay, where are things on finance, and is it something that I want to be carrying into this next stage? We might do a few of those. I might start looking at boat sales again and things like that. So I've got a couple of people who are contributing data, and we'll see what these numbers hold over the next few weeks.
Well, it's interesting because you do start to see cracks around the edges, and somebody highlighted to me the other day that the number of boats for sale in Australia have gone up. and some of the expensive cars, you know, are on the second-hand market. And just talking about the vehicle, did you see that photograph from the UK? They were showing a photograph down the runway. It was parked from end to end with brand new Range Rovers and other top-end vehicles that they can't sell. I mean, this is you know, a remarkably you know, remarkable turnaround. In Australia, the latest vehicle sales came out yesterday, and it dropped dramatically. And it's actually the consumer end of the market that's fallen away, which is another leading indicator of trouble ahead. I guess that the point we should make, Joe, is that whilst the virus has precipitated a lot of stuff, there were signs of this happening before the virus hit.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. I watched a little segment on the news last night, and there was a walk around Tauranga, which is a place that I visited a couple of times for DFA, and we've done a couple of video shows there. I think we did the Out and About and Sunny New Zealand post back at the end of 2018. Mm. And then I probably September, October last year, I did a walk around Tauranga and just showing all the commercial premises that were empty. And it was... it's amazing because you're looking at the news last night and they're blaming 22 shops on Devonport Street being closed as a result of coronavirus. I did that same walk around in September last year. And actually, if you go back and look at the video, you can see they're all bloody closed anyway. Now, the thing that we're now seeing is the reports from the bodies that govern and oversee the commercial property market. Now, New Zealand's a strange place. If you look back at Ireland, when they had their credit bust, there were legislation changed so that what you have with most commercial premises is that there's typically clauses that mean that rents can't ever be negotiated down. They always get negotiated up. And Ireland successfully overturned those after their credit issues at the end of the 2000s. Now, we don't have that largely over here, but it does appear from the report that we've had from New Zealand Council of Retail Property. So now they're talking about large numbers of people looking at rent changes. So they represent 5,000 tenants. Sorry, they represent landlords who have 5,000 tenants. Now they're talking about around 75% of those tenants have, over the lockdown period, renegotiated terms. Now, whether that's permanent or short term will remain to be seen, because there's an awful lot of empty commercial space all over the country. Every major centre has huge amounts of empty commercial space. But they are talking about rent reductions of up to 50%. Now, that's going to have to happen for these businesses in this period. But the lag for me is what happens and how do they stimulate the demand afterwards. Now, we've touched on the car phenomena. Now, there is new cars are always a nice thing to have, but they're not always an essential. And, you lose money the minute you drive them off the forecourt. But to keep those businesses going, are we going to see a return to things like the scrappage schemes that we had in the UK? Is that something that a government will consider? Take the old secondhand stuff out of the market so that it's just not an option, and to encourage people to go and buy a new one with a, you know, government-backed price on their old banger, to go and take the credit out to buy the new vehicles, to get them, you know, to get the surplus stock off the forecourts, away from the ports, and in the UK, away from the runways. So, we're going to see some really interesting things, and I'm not sure how this plays out.
No, well, you know, you can see all of the stresses and strains in the retail sector before the virus hit, you know. So I did several shows when I walked around different areas and just showed, again, closed shops. And we've had more and more retailers fall over. The other thing, of course, in Australia, there's been some intervention in the rental markets to try and stop people from being foreclosed within the sort of the 6-month window of the virus. But some of the big companies have just saying we're not going to pay rents anymore. So, you know, because they've got enough muscle to do it. Some of the small guys are struggling because they're still being asked to pay rent despite the fact they've got no footfall through their properties. Through their shops, as it were. I actually think this could be a significant turning point in the whole retail story going forward, because you begin to wonder, you know, to what extent retail is going to come back. And in fact, there was a report today saying that the CBD shopping areas around the country probably will never be the same again because of what's happened. So, I mean, these are big changes. But again, I go back to my point. A lot of this was happening before the virus actually hit. And it's just sort of brought it all to the surface.
We had a few businesses here fall over almost the minute that we went into lockdown. So Burger King nationwide went, I'm going to say, tits up very, very quickly. So no cash flow. I'm presuming that they would have been able to offer their employees of, you know, the guarantees of reduced income because they'd all had reduced hours. But that business didn't last 2 minutes. Now they'll be palming off the debt on whoever, you know, whoever the financing bank was, and maybe it'll reopen in a new entity when we go to level two, which hopefully, by the looks of it, will be by next Wednesday. Now, if you look at, I guess, the way that this manifested itself in the UK after the credit crisis, so back at the end of the 2000s, what happened was that a lot of the retail premises that were typically not in the centre of high streets, they're often the ones on the peripheral ends of the high street towns, but where buildings were older, where there were, you know, there were, I suppose, brick built, they were quite solid foundations, and many of them actually had the opportunity to go and redevelop back into residential property. So there's a massive change of class classification, and you could redevelop commercial premises and retail premises quite easily. Now, I look at New Zealand and I look at Australia, and actually these buildings generally, they're not conducive to turning into residential, or not easily, unless you actually knock them down and start again. Whereas in the UK, there were, you know, hundreds and hundreds of buildings that you could very quickly turn into a residential block of apartments and actually turn something that was never going to find a commercial tenant again into something that could provide housing. So how we deal with that in places like Tauranga and that ghost town post that I did last year, you can see that, you know, largely single story buildings, and the lack of parking, the lack of amenity around them means that they're actually very, very difficult to go and convert into anything else. So yeah, how we manage that, that's going to be an interesting dilemma for policymakers.
Yes, and particularly when there's probably an oversupply of residential anyway, before you start converting or knocking them down and building up again. Though interestingly, in New South Wales, they've announced that they're going to actually fast track a number of large residential developments to try and actually bring people back into the working environment again, right? So they're cutting corners and using the property sector to try and actually support the economy again.
Yeah, well, I haven't yet seen any government purchasing of developments that have stalled or need to be kick-started, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a development agency set up to go and look at those types of things, particularly with the larger developers. You look at the exposure that a company like Fletcher has, you know, largest construction company in New Zealand. They have got empty sites that are, many are actually finished. Places like the one central development in Central Christchurch, there are, you know, hundreds of units there that have been constructed and lay fallow. The market disappeared with the foreign buyer ban, and it's not recovered from the domestic market. Same applies in Auckland with many of the high-rise developments there. So we've actually started to track again some of the numbers, and a friend of mine, Nigel, he was kindly putting this data together for a little while, just looking at some of the major regional centres and what's happening in terms of the number of properties available for rent and for sale. Now, largely this information, and we've been tracking it since July last year. I think we've shown it once, possibly in a previous post, maybe twice. But it wasn't showing major discrepancies. But we're starting to see some like really interesting stuff coming up. So just run through a few of the charts. Nigel's actually sent it to me, and it's a funny bug because he's actually titled it New Venezuela Charts rather than New Zealand. If you look at the Auckland CBD, the residential market, and he's tracking both the total volume of properties available for sale and the total properties available for rent. First chart that comes up there, we stopped doing anything during lockdowns. We just figured, well, things will stay the same. They won't, you know, you won't see new houses coming on. You probably won't see new rentals coming on either. So, you know, we just left a bit of a gap just to save Nigel some time. But there's been an enormous spike in the rental stock, particularly in Auckland Central. So the CBD residential development market, the numbers were hovering at around 800 properties available for rent, and it's spiked up to 1,200. So you've seen a 50% increase in the available stock in just a week after movement from level four to level three. Now, I've been a bit surprised at the advice that real estate agents have been giving clients during the lockdown period, because, you know, for the first 4 weeks, you couldn't, or 4.5 weeks, you couldn't show a house. So you're actually doing your client a disservice by continuing to advertise it. It just sits there, it gets stale. Buyers look at it and think, oh, well, it's been kicking around and it's not a new listing. That's great for the agent because they get their little face on TradeMe or realestate.co.nz, and therefore their profile is continued to be maintained. But it's actually not very good for the client. So it's a bit surprised that as many sellers didn't say, look, can you just take my house off the market during the lockdown and relaunch it afterwards? Because many of the major portals have offered that opportunity for sellers to do exactly that without incurring further costs. That Auckland CBD residential market, that I think is probably that switch of the Airbnbs, which are very popular as people come into Auckland, one of the two major airports that people arrive on holiday, and then they go and take an Airbnb for a few days just to get over jet lag and get ready to go on the tours. That's something that we'll watch with bated breath as more agents this week are actually out, able to take photographs of houses and actually get them listed. Dunedin, which has been one of the, fairy tale markets of the last 12 months. That's where we've seen credit growth and a tight market on listings, tight market on rentals, generally rental prices have been going up, property prices have been going up as fast as they have been anywhere else in the country. You're seeing a sort of a tandem move up in both the availability of stock for rent and for purchase. So keep an eye on that. That's I always worry about the last areas of a boom, because they're often the ones that get hammered the most and take the longest to recover in a downturn. And I don't think anyone's disputing that we're going to see a fairly significant downturn in activity and prices. We don't know yet what the job numbers are going to be, but the March quarter jobless numbers rose, but only slightly, from 4.2 to 4.4%. But we've got everybody on furlough schemes at the moment. And like the UK, I think the UK now, over 50% of the workforce are either employed by the government, supported by the government through pension, through welfare, or through the furlough scheme. So New Zealand is probably similar. And that furlough scheme that we've got at the moment, it will come to an end in the middle of June. So we'll see whether or not there's another announcement with the budget coming on May the 14th. The Auckland City residential market refers to housing stock. So this is rather than apartments. This is actually residential dwellings, which are standalone. And you can see that there's not been a massive move in the listings for sale, but the rental market again has spiked up. That will be, I'm guessing, some of the holiday lets that people rent out, the big four bedroom houses at Airbnbs, perhaps. Are we seeing an impact from the complete destruction of the foreign student numbers that won't be happening this year. As you go a bit further down, Hamilton residential market, not much movement there. There's been an enormous amount of development around Hamilton. They've got the road that they're developing, a sort of faster link to Auckland City. We'll watch that. So we're going to start tracking these and just see what happens. And I think that it'll become more meaningful in 4, 5, 6 weeks. Tauranga residential market, the availability of property for sale has actually gone up. So post-lockdown, there's an immediate spike. And that's one of the five areas that we mentioned in the last post where there is a concentration of the Airbnb sector. The residential properties available for rent, just a small uptick. Wellington region. Wellington's a really funny town because you see every year in December, the availability of rent spikes as the students go home and all the student accommodation becomes available for next year's. And then typically during January, February, March, the rental availability drops off. That's had a small uptick since the start of lockdown. The availability of property for sales hasn't moved. Wellington's economy is probably more insulated from that 90% of government GDP that we talked about earlier on in the post. So will there be the same pressure in that market? Not sure. So we'll keep an eye on these things and just see what the numbers tell us. We'll probably start looking at some other indicators in terms of the TradeMe stats on various other commodities. So just see what happens.
Very interesting, Joe. And the Airbnb thing is really one of the most fascinating elements. So I survey households here in Australia, and one of the questions that I've been asking for the last couple of months is intention to sell. So are there people looking to essentially move property on? And about 8% of property investors in Australia are saying they're really seriously considering getting out, right? But half of those are actually ex-Airbnb. So 4% of property investors that essentially had Airbnb, suddenly that no longer works, right? Yeah. And so this Airbnb phenomenon, I think, is quite fascinating. It's also created a huge hike in terms of number of listings here in Australia too. So I think that the truth is that nobody understood how much of the property market was supported by those short-term lets.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that that will be the same probably in many major cities around the world, places like Barcelona, Madrid, Venice, London, a lot of areas where people have gone into that market. They're now competing with, you know, massive discounts in the hotel market. Probably, you know, we'll see what the leverage levels are. I did read, I can't remember what it was, I think it was on Wolf Street, a discussion around Airbnb actually providing some assistance for some of their landlords in American cities. I think San Francisco was mentioned, where they're actually providing sort of, not a rent guarantee, but they're providing a support system. And where that's been funded, don't know. There's all sorts of crazy funding going on at the minute.
Well, it'd be interesting to see as at what point that is opened back up again. But even when it's opened up, your other point's really important. The international traveller, which actually was a large element within this whole scheme of things, is gone, you know. And there's very little likelihood of true international travel opening up. There might be an opening up between Australia and New Zealand down the track a little bit, but that's only a microcosm, right? So it's going to actually continue to put long-term pressure on the income from Airbnb rentals. And interestingly, in Australia, I'm not sure whether it's the same in New Zealand, the rentals are also dropping across the board, simply because there's now massive supply and less people actually, to take the supply that's there. So people are actually having to cut their rents just to get somebody to come in.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. I think that there are a lot of businesses now that are realizing that, the flight that you and I might have made to go and catch up with each other for a meeting, we can do on Skype. I mean, you and I have been doing this for a couple of years already anyway.
But ahead of the curve, Joe, ahead of the curve.
Miles ahead of the curve. just sit down in our nuclear bunkers and just see what happens. I think that the discretionary spend, if it's absolutely necessary, it'll happen. But I think there's a lot of businesses that'll be looking at, okay, do I want to add that to the expenses column on the balance sheet? No, I don't. Can I control that meeting with a Zoom session? So we'll see how businesses develop, how they adapt to this. But inevitably, the bricks and mortar side of retail and residential property and Airbnbs is going to be massively affected.
Absolutely. Well, Joe, I appreciate your time today. That's been a really interesting update, and we'll check back in again in the next few days. I think we're going to have to talk quite regularly now, because there are so many things changing quite quickly. And I noticed I ran my live stream yesterday, and there were a number of people saying, hey, let's get more on New Zealand, please, more on New Zealand. So we'll try and keep that end of the bargain going.
Sounds good, mate. Sounds good. Look after yourself. Take care.
Catch you soon. See you soon. Thanks, Joe. Take care. Bye-bye.